Congratulations, you have just found the number one over 50 health and wellness podcast on the planet. Hello and welcome to the Over 50 Health and Wellness Show. I'm your host, Kevin English. I'm a healthy aging expert and the founder of The Silver Edge, and I'm on a mission to help men and women just like you build lean, strong, healthy, capable bodies that they love for the rest of their lives. Today, we're going to dive into the nuanced differences and considerations in fitness training for men and women. Whether you're a fitness enthusiast, someone looking to get back in shape, or you're just curious about optimizing your workouts for better results and longevity, this episode promises to shed light on how our training needs evolve with our age. And hang on, I haven't even told you the best part yet. My co-host for this episode is none other than rockstar Silver Edge coach Jess Wold. Jess brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to the table, discussing everything from the impact of hormonal changes to practical training advice for both men and women. Stay tuned as we explore how to approach fitness intelligently and effectively, ensuring that you show up as the healthiest, strongest, most vital version of yourself in the second half of your life. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's jump into today's episode. Jess, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, it's always fun to have a chat. I mean, we chat every week, but it's always fun to have these chats. So I want to start today by telling you I did something for the very first time, and I just got to share it with you. I tried pickleball for the first time in my life. Let's see, I guess not last weekend, but the weekend before. So basically a little over a week ago. Are you a pickleballer? Have you tried this yet?
I am not. I would like to try it, but I will say I can't believe it's taken you so long to try it.
Yeah, right? Okay, so look, when this comes out, I'll be a week past my 60th birthday, so I am prime time for
pickleball.
You're
there, yeah.
I'm there. Well, here's what happened. So I'm not even sure what gave me the idea. I talked to Dr. Matt Dawson, he was on the Wild Health episode. Mm-hmm. He's a young man. I think he's in his 40s, but he had mentioned, oh, I just love pickleball. I'm spending a lot of my time playing pickleball. I think he was like a pretty serious athlete in his youth. And I kind of said, well, what are you doing today? He's like, oh man, I'm just obsessed with pickleball. I was like, huh, pickleball, huh? And maybe that's what planted the seed. I mean, obviously I know what pickleball is, but it never really occurred to me to go out and play it. Well, I'm out here in the boondocks, but right around the corner, there's this little Brunswick County Park kind of place. And of course, it has some tennis courts, which have been converted to pickleball courts. And so I went on Amazon, and for $25, you can get two paddles and four balls. I'm like, all right, you can't lose, right? So I got the pickleball stuff, and me and my daughter, Emma, went out and we played pickleball for the first time. So I went on YouTube. I watched, I didn't have the patience to watch a big long one, like how to count score and all that stuff, because that looked pretty complicated. But there was like this 3-minute getting started in pickleball video that was perfect for my short attention span. I watched that. I was like, okay, got it. There's the kitchen. There's the little zones and all this stuff. Went out and guess what happened?
What?
I'm hooked. Basically, I probably will only continue this business until I go pro. That's kind of where I am right now. I've now played pickleball twice. I feel like I have a natural affinity for it, and I'm in love with that game. I mean,
how fun to discover a new sport,
right?
You know, and like you said, at turning 60 and have something to get you out of the house and
right, yeah,
play with friends.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't really have much of a history with paddle sports. My dad was really big into racquetball. So when I was a little kid, I would get, you know, way back once upon a time. I think most of us, our age group, probably remember when we went to the gym with our parents, if our parents did such a thing, there were, you know, racquetball courts there. So I played racquetball mm-hmm. as a kid. I can remember being kind of naturally sort of good at ping pong, although never really having played it, never played tennis a day in my life. But pickleball, yeah. I mean, I just really had a blast. I was just, you know, my daughter, right, Emma? And I was just,
yeah.
For folks listening, she's an adult. She's 21, so she could take this. And I was just talking mad trash the whole time. And she's a very athletic young lady as well. So we had a blast. And what occurred to me is that what a wonderful sport for people in our age group. I can see why folks our age are taking this up in record numbers. The barrier to entry is very, very low. Like I said, I went on Amazon. I've now bought two kits so that my son can play with us. I'm still trying to talk my wife into coming out and playing with us. So I now have four. I spent a grand total of $50. And I can tell you, I'm not far off from investing in, having only played twice, but I already told you, I'm going pro here. So I'm serious. and finding, doing a little bit of internet investigation, a little internet research to find the best pickleball paddle, because I'm pretty sure my $25 for two paddles is probably not the best you can buy, but I had a blast. But it's easy to play. It's got that little wiffle ball. You're outside. The court's smaller than tennis. So I've not
That's
played.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, I've not played doubles yet, which is how it's commonly played, is my understanding, mm-hmm. my very, of course, at this point, limited understanding. So I've only played with them. I've played with her twice, and I have thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed myself. So I got, we're recording this late in the afternoon here on a Tuesday. I've got some calls after this. I'm a little bummed. I'm not going to get to the court today, but I bet you tomorrow about late afternoon, I'm just gonna meet her out there, and we might play a little more pickleball. So yeah, I'm hooked.
I love it. I mean, we have a pickleball court in my neighborhood, but I've never played. And we have rackets and a ball. I think we do, or we've inherited them from a friend because my son goes down there and he'll play. I don't think he's playing by any rules other than they're hitting it back and forth. But
yeah, the scoring seemed a little bit confusing to me. Like I said, I did literally 3 minutes of research on YouTube on how to play pickleball, and they started to talk about the scoring. I was like, that sounds way too confusing. But yeah, there's this zone called the kitchen up in the front. I think it's called the kitchen. But yeah, no, it is so much fun. Just even batting the ball back and forth it's great workout. Now, I will say this. I did. Now, of course, I've gone down the pickleball rabbit hole. And as soon as you buy pickleball on Amazon, all of your socials apparently are spying on you anyway. So figure what's in my feed are all these pickleball things. And I'm addicted. I can't help it. When I'm watching the pickleballs going, I've got to see what happens, how it ends. But a news story popped up that said something along the lines that people are getting injured in droves, like in record numbers playing pickleball. And at first I was like, does that sound right? And then I thought to myself, given the people that typically play pickleball, older people, let's just say, and given how low, it's not like tennis where you better be in at least decent shape when you play singles tennis, right? That's a lot of running. There's less so in pickleball, especially if you're playing doubles. So I can see how that would be, right? Because we have these now older folks that perhaps aren't in great shape, right? But even more importantly, they're probably not used to moving explosively in these different planes of movement, right? These explosive lateral moves, etc. And I can see how we might see some, I think the article said something about rotator cuffs, knees, making arthritis worse, plantar fasciitis, all the things you might think. And I can see how that would be the case for somebody who's not been particularly active or athletic in their 50s, 60s, 70s, even 80s, right? And getting out on the court, having fun, and then all of a sudden being like, ooh, come up a little lame. So it got me thinking, right? Maybe at the Silver Edge, we can have a special program, maybe after I go pro, right? Or at least after I play a couple more weekends here, where we come up with some sort of programming, we make a pickleball strong program or something like that. Because it seemed to me that, things like Cassock squats and leaps and bounds and more ballistic type training would be really, really good for a 50, 60, 70-year-old person who wants to either A, play recreationally without getting hurt, or maybe somebody who's playing and just like wants to seriously up their game, be strong and fit and capable to play this game at a higher level. At any rate, I'll let you know right now, I'm addicted to pickleball. I had a blast.
Well, don't forget about us here when you
after
go
I go pro. All right, that's right. I'll just leave the business to you guys, and maybe you can have me. One of you, Monica, maybe Russell, take over the podcast, and you can have me on as a guest. I'll say, I remember back when I was the Silver Edge guy. Now I'm the famous pickleball guy. I don't know. Are there famous pickleball people? There probably are.
I mean, there must be somewhere. I don't even know where it started. Do you?
No, I don't. But it's older than you think. I thought it started at COVID. Yeah. That's the first time I'd ever heard of it, right? It was about that time.
I've
but it's
heard
been
of
around
it,
before that, yeah.
Yeah. Like I've heard about it, and I think it was probably another country, you know,
maybe
like Australia or something.
Yeah.
Where they're doing all the fun things.
I will say this, younger and younger people are playing. So the guy my daughter's dating right now, he's a very young man. I mean, she's 21, he's young 20s, and he's serious. That's what he does. That's his thing. He plays pickleball. So it seems to be getting some traction. So we'll see. Maybe there'll be a pro league. People out there that are serious pickleballers are probably screaming at their whatever they're listening to this on right now. You idiot. There is a league. There is a pro league. So, yeah.
I mean, I think there's like pro badminton, isn't there?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, the only time I've ever seen serious badminton played is when when the Olympics are on, and that's a whole different game than anything I've ever played in anybody's backyard. I will say that.
Yeah.
I mean, that is serious. And pickleball, I'm sure same kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe we'll catch that on ESPN, The Ocho. what was that movie? Dodgeball. Have you seen the movie Dodgeball with Ben Stiller?
Yes.
I certainly hope so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody who has, mm-hmm. and I don't know what you're doing. All right. So I wanted to kind of open with that yes, I am now, I'm the over 50 guy, but pretty soon I'm going to be the pickleball guy. I'm not there yet, but I have a feeling I'll be there pretty quick.
Yeah. Maybe the pickleball trainer to the stars.
Pickleball trainer to the stars. Yeah, that's right. All right. I want to tell you, I saw a couple of crazy, crazy, crazy things online. Again, I didn't have any social media before I started this business. I had none. And then it turns out you can't have an online business of any type, right, without having social media. So I guess it's been over close to 5 years ago now, right? Had my daughter who was a teenager at the time, and she set me up on Instagram. So that was my first thing. I had an Instagram account when I launched my business. Then shortly thereafter, I joined a coaching business group, and they were like, well, you have to have Facebook. And I don't really want that. I said, no, it's a requirement of this, of what you just signed up for. So then I had Facebook and Instagram, and now I have them all, right? I don't really, I want to like Twitter/X, but I don't. And that's really, I think where our age demographic is mostly on Twitter/X. I don't get it. I don't understand why somebody wants to say something in say something inflammatory in one sentence. Whatever. But at any rate, I'm saying all this to say I'm on all of them now, TikToks, all of it. And so I get, the algorithm loves me, right? The algorithm is just feeding me stuff. Like I said, now there's tons of pickleball in there right now, but I tend to seek out some of the most outrageous stuff in the nutrition and health industry. So it gets fed to me, right? I follow this guy. Do you know Metabolic Mike on Instagram by any chance? Do you follow him?
I've seen some of his things, but I don't follow him.
He's pretty popular. He's a pretty popular dude. He has a YouTube channel. Dang, Mike, sorry. I'll get you the name of his YouTube channel for anybody listening that's interested. He's got a great YouTube channel. I'll put that in the show notes to this. But Metabolic Mike, and his name's Mike Mutzel or Mutzel or something like that. But anyway, I follow him. So, of course, he pops up in my feed, and he's saying, this is ridiculous. Here's this registered dietitian telling people that they should be eating this crap food. And I'm like, oh, wow. So I looked and saw who the nutrition coach was, or the registered dietitian was. And it's this woman, Kelsey Koenig. And she's a registered dietitian. So I went to her account, and the very first post she has is a reaction post to his reaction post. Okay. So let me back up. She posted something. I'm going to get there. I'm going to tell you what it is.
Okay.
This guy who I follow, Metabolic Mike, posted a reaction to it and saying, this is crap, right? And I mean, he tore into her a little bit. And he also did a YouTube video on her. So I was curious about her. I went and looked her up. I was like, who is this woman and what kind of crap did she say, right? I wanted to go see it. And before I saw her original post, there's a post of her reacting to this guy, Metabolic Mike's reaction to her. And she's going, well, didn't really feel good, but this guy, he doesn't understand. He probably just works with athletes, and he's not meeting people where they are. And you have to understand there's room for all of us in this space and nutrition and health and all this. I'm like, oh, well, that certainly sounds reasonable. And then I go back and look at her original post, and it is something, it was picked up by Eat This, Not That. Are you familiar with that account?
Okay.
Those people? Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're so, folks, don't get your nutrition information from Eat This.
Yeah.
Not That. They're horrible. Occasionally they have decent suggestions, but sometimes they're just batshit crazy. So she had this article that she wrote. I don't know if it was written for Eat This, Not That. And it was titled, What a Dietitian Orders at McDonald's to Stay Healthy. And I'm like, okay, that's intriguing, right? That's very clickbaity. Mm-hmm. Hey, what would a registered dietitian, a nutritionist order at McDonald's in order to stay healthy? Here are the three food recommendations. So she had a breakfast, a lunch, and a dessert. So for breakfast, an egg McMuffin. And I'm like, okay, that would not be what I would say to eat to be healthy. I would say that if your option was an egg McMuffin or fasting until you got something healthy, fast until you got something healthy. But sure, egg McMuffin. Okay. I haven't eaten at McDonald's in a decade myself. But she goes on to say for lunch, you want to guess what she said is the healthy option for lunch as a registered dietitian with a ton of followers on her Instagram? Think something horrible. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. It's not, I don't know what's healthy at McDonald's. Like I said, I don't go in there, but it's the McCrispy. It's the McDonald's McCrispy chicken sandwich. So it's a fried chicken sandwich.
That's what I was going to guess. A chicken sandwich.
Yeah. Fried chicken sandwich. And so that's really where Metabolic Mike is kind of tearing into her. It's like, look, lady, you cannot say in any universe that is something you should eat to stay healthy. Right.
Right.
Horrible.
Now, guys. Right. I agree. But I also will say I watched one time a video about McDonald's employees, what they recommend ordering from McDonald's as far as where the food comes from, what it looks like when they get it, you know, and
was the McCrispy chicken sandwich?
No,
it wasn't.
No. It was on there, but they said any of the fried chicken patties or the grilled chicken patties come from China.
Whew, that's a long ways away.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. And some of them were saying they wouldn't even categorize it as chicken.
Oh, I'm sure. It's mechanically separated chicken parts with a bunch of other things.
And I think we've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I've seen the videos of the way they make chicken McNuggets before, which really turned me off. But that the burgers, the meat was from the United States. It was, you know, it was beef from the United States. Looked like a beef patty before they cooked it.
Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, I'm not recommending go out and get McDonald's, but I guess I would say the burger if I were to choose.
Yeah. I would not say anything fried. I mean, come on.
No.
Here's my thoughts on this. So in her defense, she's saying, hey, I'm trying to meet people where they are. And I'm sorry, lady. If you are a person in authority, you're a registered dietitian, you have a large following on social media, I personally feel like you have a responsibility to help people understand nutrition and apply it to their life. If you want to be she's a social influencer, right? She's a nutrition, health, fitness influencer. And for her to say, this is what I eat when I want a healthy choice at McDonald's, is horrible advice for people who there's so much conflicting information already out there. When somebody hears that, they're like, if I'm going through McDonald's drive-through because things are crazy, kids, whatever, yada, 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 I'll just order the McCrispy chicken sandwich and I'll follow it up with the ice cream cone because that's the other thing that she recommends.
She's like, I was going to ask.
It only has 24 grams of sugar and that's not bad and it's low fat. And I'm like, it's low in saturated fat, I think she says. So I don't know. It seems like we're already fighting a losing battle as nutrition coach. Hey, you should really eat whole foods, right? And watch out for this ultra-processed crap. We have a tiny social media following compared to people with these much bigger platforms. Mm-hmm. You think about Eat This, Not That. They have 500,000 followers. And they've got this headline screaming, hey, this is what a dietitian recommends to eat healthy. And really, really poor messaging. It got picked up by New York Post, Daily Mail. So it's being repeated out there. I don't know. I feel like it's almost like me saying, hey, folks, I recommend Marlboro cigarettes for when you need to smoke. Marlboro is probably your best brand. And here's why. That tobacco is grown in Virginia and it's grown organically. That's the best smoke you can get. And that's what I smoke when I need a smoke and I need a smoke break. I'm going for, it reminds me in the I think it was the 40s or 50s, Camel had, have you ever seen those old fashioned ads for Camels? I think it's more doctors smoke Camel than any other cigarettes or something.
Yeah,
it's a big, big campaign for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's just what I feel like when I see somebody in a position of power, in a position of influence, saying just total garbage like that. That's, I don't care what she says about, oh, I'm serving a different audience and I'm meeting people where they are. If that's the case, and say, hey, the message might be, I get it. The kids are crazy. You're just coming home from soccer practice. You haven't made anything for lunch and they're starving. They love McDonald's. You're going to go through the drive-through. Yeah, I get it. It's convenient. It's cheap. Maybe it's delicious, mm-hmm. but she's not allowed to say it's nutritious. She just isn't. I mean, well,
right.
obviously she doesn't have freedom of speech. She can say whatever she wants, but I say shame on her, right?
Yeah.
Shame on her. That's horrible. Anyway.
Yeah.
I figured you would agree with me on that. But yeah, the McChick, I didn't know there was a McCrispy chicken sandwich. There is.
Yeah.
There's a registered dietitian out there that thinks that is a healthy choice for you. All right.
And I don't think you'd find us recommending that to our clients.
No.
I would just say if it's in your food tracking and you ate it, just move on.
Right.
After
Look, yes.
Yeah.
There aren't any morally bad foods, but that one from it, if you're trying to make a case, you can make a case that a McCrispy chicken sandwich is a lot of things. You could say it's enjoyable. Mm-hmm. It's fun to eat. It's cheap. It's convenient. It's tasty. It's all these things. It's just not nutritious in any universe.
Right.
Right.
So, like if you were really craving a McDonald's McCrispy chicken sandwich, then go eat it and be done with your day.
Right.
But don't tell yourself it's healthy.
Don't fool it. Yeah. That's bullshit. Anyway.
Yeah.
Got another one for you. This one I just saw today before we started recording. I'm scrolling a little bit. So have you heard, are you a TikToker? Are you on TikTok?
I'm not.
That's
I'm
one
not a
of
TikToker.
The few. Yeah, because we post our, like we'll take clips from this, for example, and post them on TikTok. So I'm on there once or twice a week. Maybe I can see how it can be addictive though. and right now my feed is flooded with pickleball videos, by the way. But I saw this thing and I saw it a couple of times. It's, have you heard of Ozempic, O-A-T, oat Zempic, like Ozempic, the prescription weight loss drug, only oat?
Yes, but I don't know what it is, but I've heard it.
Okay. So I flipped through a couple of them quickly and I was like, wait, Ozempic, what the hell is that? And it's people that are saying, hey, have you heard this? This is the latest TikTok trend. And as I went down the rabbit hole, it is a big TikTok trend right now. So the promise is this. If you drink Ozempic, it's this cheap alternative to Ozempic, you can lose 40 pounds in 2 months.
Oh.
So that's how it's been. Now, this has been picked up by all the major news outlets. So if you just go to Google and Google Ozempic, you'll see it's on CBS, NBC. It's on all of the major, all of the outlets have picked this up. But what it is a half cup of oats, a cup of water, a pinch of cinnamon. It's something else. It's a squeeze of lime, and you just blend it all together. That's it. That's
and you what lose 40 pounds.
Well, yeah. Because
is that the only thing you're eating all day?
Maybe. I didn't get to the bottom of that part. It's the idea is it's a meal replacement, right? And what is that? 100 and change calories? 120, 150, less than 150, probably closer to 120, 130 calories. Should have looked that up.
Mm-hmm.
But half a cup of oats is not very many. I mean, it's got some fiber, so I can see how maybe it would make you feel full a little bit, maybe, but it's just a carb. So it's, you know, and it's a more complex carb than other carbs. But there are people out there. So meanwhile, that once you watch one of those videos all the way through, then your next video is probably going to be somebody else talking about how they make Ozempic. Oh, I like to put some chocolate in mine and all of this and all that. So people are out there thinking that they're going to lose 40 pounds in 2 months by drinking this Ozempic, save them all kinds of money by not spending $1,500 a month on the actual real deal.
We're living in a crazy world right now.
In a crazy, crazy world. Yes, we are.
And I know you and Monica talked about it on the podcast last week or a couple weeks ago. And it's been around for a couple years now. And I have some clients that have been on, not currently, but, you know, have been on it before. And I've just kind of started tuning it out because it just has gotten so crazy with it. And don't know anybody that can be on it for a couple years. And then this oat Ozempic comes out, and then I'm pretty sure that must be the only thing they've had all day if they've lost 40 pounds in 2 months.
I'm guessing what that is exactly that. I mean, look, it's pretty simple math, right? If you are severely low calorie, you're going to lose weight. That doesn't mean you're going to lose fat. It means you're going to lose weight, right? Especially in our age group, that's even more dangerous than, say, a 20-year-old kid doing it. But that serious calorie deficit over time is just digging a deeper and deeper metabolic hole that you're eventually going to have to crawl out of or not, right? Just live there.
I mean, or maybe lime-flavored oatmeal drink is maybe so gross you can't eat anything.
Maybe it's the acidity from the lime and then the touch, the sprinkle of the, I think it said a pinch of cinnamon. Maybe there's something magic that happens when that chemically acts with the, or reacts with the oats in that special way you blend it, maybe has some sort of magical fat burning properties. Maybe. It is nuts.
I mean,
people
will try anything except common sense.
Yeah. And look, I get it too, right? I mean, I love working out. I love eating healthy, and that doesn't mean I love going to the gym every day, but I like the way it makes me feel. I love my life as a healthy human. But the idea, if you are so far away from that, that it feels out of touch, or I had somebody recently was kind of giving me some crap right after Easter. I didn't want the peanut butter Reese's egg, and turns out they're on sale after Easter. You can get them really, really cheap. And they were like, it must suck being you and not having the freedom to enjoy all the things that, like, you know, kind of that, hey, eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow, we're going to die kind of spiel. And it made me think, you know, about that whole idea of freedom. And it's kind of funny. 2 nights ago, I had this wonderful, wonderful, my wife made it for me. It was these gourmet ginger cookies, like real ginger, like spicy ginger with some strawberry ice cream and some strawberries that had sugar on them. So they were gooey, right? Whatever you call that, shortcakey kind of thing with whipped cream on it. I mean, it's not like I don't eat, I don't enjoy wonderful things occasionally, but when I think about that freedom, right, that freedom statement, because that comes up, right? You know, I don't drink very much alcohol, and that's a personal decision. It's also just been a journey I've been on. I choose healthier foods most of the time, and I feel that it makes me, the freedom that I enjoy is the freedom to do whatever the hell I want physically.
Yeah.
If I want to go play, I'm joking about, well, maybe I am, maybe I'm not, about being pro in pickleball, but I'm fit enough. I bet I could tear up the 60 and older division. Now, turns out I believe there's a little bit of finesse and skill involved in that game and not just being healthy and fit. But, you know, I can clean and jerk a decent amount of weight. I can deadlift. I can sprint still. I can do these. And that's my freedom. That's the trade-off of me not just eating candy and binging Netflix and being sedentary, saying, you know, it's just not worth it. Right?
Right.
Do you hear that from people?
Yeah.
Hey, I'd be healthy, but I just don't feel like it's worth it. So I'll just be unhealthy.
Oh, all the time.
All the time.
And I feel like, you know, I see it a lot. I don't want to call anybody out. So I'll just say I see it a lot. And I see that decision of, I already ate 10 of my kids' Reese's eggs, so why don't I just sit here and finish the rest? Yeah. Or now I'm on to making cookies and I ate half the batter of cookie dough, you know, and then why not just order pizza for dinner because I've already gone down this. And it's like, I do think once you make that choice in really commit to your health, like, do those days happen? Sure. Yeah. But I feel like eventually, you get to a place where you don't let that own you.
Right.
Like, we had a lot of Reese's eggs at my house around Easter. You know, the Easter bunny puts them in the kids' baskets. Mm-hmm. And I did not indulge this year. And that's one of my fate. You know, if I was going to have a candy bar, I guess that would be it.
The Reese's peanut butter? Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Reese's peanut butter cup. Right on. But I kept looking at it. And I was like, it's not worth it today. Yeah. I'd rather have, you know, we were going to dinner at a friend's house. I'd rather have a dessert there. And then what happened was I didn't even end up having that because it wasn't anything that looked good to me. And if I'm going to have sugar or sweet, to me, it's got to be worth it.
Got to be worth it. Yeah. It's more of the exception, the rule. It's that it's not something. But you're right. That's interesting. You bring that up, that people will have that mentality or that psychology, well, I've already done this and screw it. I might as well just do the other unhealthy things, right? What's the use?
Right.
And that's a very common phenomenon, I feel like. That's just, I don't know why that's baked into us as human beings, but I feel like that's almost the default switch. And it's, you have to work hard to kind of get out of that thought, right? Well,
and I think a lot of the times too, like I know that, you know, there's that reward feeling that you eat something that you like and your body, your brain releases oxytocin.
Instantly, yes.
And that is a good feeling. It is. And for some people, they can't turn that off. So then they do it again. And then, you know, that all of a sudden their digestive system starts catching up with them. And they're like, oh, that was a bad choice. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish I could have stopped. But it really is that like,
that reward
losing
in the
that
moment.
Willpower.
Yeah. That reward in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess it's a matter of, it's like anything. It's like working out, right? The muscles take a long time to develop, and probably that willpower muscle or that delayed gratification muscle, because the freedom we're talking about isn't, or the pleasure that we're talking about, that the benefit that we're talking about from eating whole foods, working out regularly, et cetera, isn't instant. We don't typically get, you know, I don't get an instant hit when I eat, you know, a healthy whole foods meal, the way I would if I had, you know, say pizza and beer, and candy eggs, or, you know, Reese's peanut butter eggs. So yeah, interesting stuff.
And I recently did a sugar detox myself back in January. Yeah. I found myself not going down that binging of sugar, because I really don't do that, but just more frequently than I was comfortable with, I would eat a meal, and then, you know, you look for that one piece of dark chocolate, or what do my kids have in the pantry, or eating a leftover lunch snack that was sitting there that looked good for no reason other than I'm finished with my meal, and I am, it's a habit to have something sweet after.
Right.
And I was like, I have to, you know, I just want to break this habit and prove to myself that I can, because it's not something I want to say I really struggled with, but at the same time, it was a habit I wasn't comfortable with anymore, because it was just a habit.
Yeah.
So for January, I just decided no sweets.
Is that what you did? Just a month of no sugar?
No sweets.
No sweets.
Yeah. Like, you know, if there was sugar in my fruit, that was fine. Or a couple times I had a protein bar just because we were on the road for sports, and McDonald's or a protein bar. So it would be protein bar. And even that got to be too sweet to me, which, you know, was interesting, because I could eat those every day for a lot, for years. Yeah. And it didn't taste that. It just tasted like part of my daily diet. But I don't think that it helps. Yeah. So I learned that to just, when I was done eating, I'm like, I'm satisfied. I don't need to go look for anything else.
Well, here's the question then. Here we are, we're recording this in April. This will probably come out at the end of this month, or maybe beginning of next month. But it's been a couple of months since you did that detox. Has it changed your behaviors today? I mean, are you seeking less? Did you feel like that kind of broke you out of that? Like you said, I was kind of in that habit of every night kind of, what's looking sweet over there? Did it?
Absolutely. Okay. I don't buy anything for myself, you know, because I used to keep like a thing of like the Hue dark chocolate or the almond butter chocolate in the fridge or in the freezer, and would get a little piece, you know, every night. I haven't bought one of those. I will really only eat something sweet if it's something I really like. Yeah. Like we had cheesecake for my husband's birthday, like almost a month ago. I was having a piece of that cheesecake.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't feel terrible after I ate it. I didn't feel like I wanted more. I had one piece and I didn't have it again the next day. I just had that one piece. I feel like it definitely helped me learn when it's worth it.
Yeah. It's funny how I guess your taste buds over time sort of adapt. I used to smash the sweets, and these days, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I said, I had an amazing dessert the other night. I look forward to future desserts, but I don't really have that craving for sweet. And actually, for me, it's more, if I had a craving, it's probably more for salty. Like I'm a sucker for some just plain potato chip. So my strategy there is I don't keep them in the house.
Yeah.
And just the plain ones, right? My wife will occasionally bring home the, you know, spicy sour cream and chive or whatever. And those are yucky to me. I just want the plain old boring ones, but yeah. All right. Well, Jess, I want to talk to you a little bit about the differences in working out, training, programming between men and women. Now, this was actually, this was somebody wrote in, a listener of the podcast, and I apologize to you who wrote this in, because I wrote the question down, I didn't write your name down. So I'm very sorry. But this was a listener question from way back when. So like 6 months ago, I said, hey, what do you want to hear? Write in and we'll cover those in future topics. And we've covered most of the things people wrote in on. But one of the things we have not talked about, this somebody had written in the question of what is the main difference between training for men and women, especially over 50? I've not heard you talk about that. And they're right. We're 250 something episodes in. We've never talked about the differences in training between men and women. I've got my thoughts here on why we haven't done that yet. But I thought you'd be the perfect person to bring in and talk a little bit, because this question comes up from time to time, right? And we see it culturally, certainly in our age group, men and women in their 50s and 60s. The women, they're supposed to do little pink hand weights and Jane Fonda aerobics, and the guys are supposed to be grunting with the big barbells. And we've talked in the past about how that paradigm's definitely not only shifting, but probably has shifted.
Yeah.
But what are we talking about when we talk about the differences as a coach who works, you work with men and women? What are some of the differences and what are some of the things you're taking into consideration when it comes to both coaching and exercise programming for your ladies versus your guys?
Well, first, I love this topic. So I'm glad you had me on. And this was the listener question, because this is something that I feel like I have a lot of experience with, just seen throughout the years, differences between men and women. But, it's not just physical. There's mental and the way you recover, your nutritional needs. Like, there's so many similarities. Men and women could do the same program, but they recover so different. They need to eat so different. Yeah. They have to approach their warm-up different, or their the number of minutes that they're resting between sets differently. So I think most importantly, in the age range that we want to talk about, a lot of the women are like postmenopausal. Yeah. So there's not that many studies done. You know, I've looked it up since we've
really
been working together.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of good, especially with resistance trained 50 and 60 year old men and women.
There's really not. So, and it's unfortunate. And until recently, even like the early 2000s, most studies for training athletes, untrained people, were based around men. So, we are learning a lot more about women. And I do think that that's helpful, and things that I've learned and I try to implement. One thing I find, I don't know if you've seen this, women can train more than men.
Yes, women can handle
throughout
more,
the week,
more endurance and more volume. I have absolutely seen that anecdotally.
So I have more of my women doing like 4 or 5 days a week of working out, maybe 3 lifting, 1 day of like a bodyweight circuit, and then making sure they're getting their walking in and things like that. Where men, sometimes I have to tell them to dial it down.
What I was going to say. The guy, usually we're pushing the ladies to do more when it comes to, and when you say train, we're talking resistance training. We're talking lifting weights,
strength training. Yep.
And you got to pull a lot of the guys back, right? The guys are like, I'm hit it 6 days a week, get these gains, yo. But paradoxically, the guy's probably better off doing 3 days a week, full body, 4 days, most guys, right? There's a lot of individual difference. But in general, guys, less volume. Ladies can take more because of the recoverability, right?
Right. They have more recoverability. They have more type 1 muscle fiber than men. Men have more type 2 muscle fiber. Right. So
And larger.
Yep, right.
Larger fibers.
Right. They are. I mean, and you look at most men, they have a lot more muscle than women. So those muscles are being fatigued faster than women's muscles. So women have more fat on it. We have to have at least 10% more body fat.
Yes.
When women are trying to get down that same body percent or body fat percentage as men, it's extremely unhealthy. So I do think that just understanding that we have, I think, average like 3/4 the amount of muscle that men have, with about 20% more fat. Mm. But that does help us recover faster from those workouts. We can train a little longer, but men are doing more, might be doing more in that 1 hour session than the women is doing. They're lifting,
The intensity
maybe closer,
might be greater perhaps.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and those muscles are just fatiguing a little faster, but they have more muscle. So, but they also have a larger heart, a lot more lungs. So there's advantages to some like endurance sports and things like that. But overall for weight training, we can push the woman to do a little more than they think they can.
That's interesting. That's very counterintuitive, I think, to a lot of people. And I read somewhere that estrogen is actually involved in muscle recovery. And that's one of the contributing factors. It's not the reason why women can recover faster, but it is a contributing factor to why women might potentially recover faster than men and be able to handle, in fact, more volumes. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. And also, though, like when women and men are in over 50 and they're training, a lot of women don't have much estrogen,
right?
You know, unless they're doing and hopefully doing some sort of hormone replacement therapy. Yeah. And men's testosterone tends to start decreasing. So what estrogen can do for women, testosterone can do for men, mm-hmm. you know, as far as that muscle recovery. But for both, that starts to decline.
Right.
So it is important to, you know, I think kind of have those levels checked and know where you're at when you're
Love
training.
Love that advice, yeah.
You know,
and the earlier you do that, the better off you are, just because hopefully at some point in your life, whether you're a man or woman, you've got this hormone panel done at some point. So you have a baseline and you can trend that over time. Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. I mean, and I know it's easier for men to get their testosterone tested more regularly. It's harder for women to get their hormones tested because they change daily. Mm-hmm. So that, that test
and that's
isn't always
true for
accurate.
Guys as well. I mean,
is it?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, testosterone is typically highest in the morning. It tails off during the day. It can cycle up and down throughout the week, et cetera, based on how you slept, how recovered you are, all these different factors. So typically what doctors will try and do, a urologist will say, hey, I want you first thing in the morning fasted. That's when we do our blood draw. So we're kind of consistent with that. But even within that window, there's still be pretty decent variability okay. From day to day in men's hormone levels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, it is, like you said, it's good to get that tested early, you know, and often if you can. Where you're at.
I think that's a great idea. And I think another thing I wanted to bring up with you, because I see this, and I actually heard this on another podcast. They were talking about low energy availability from a hormonal mm-hmm. standpoint, and what they were talking about the difference between men and women. They weren't really talking about our age group. They were talking more generically, and this was more of a performance type athlete sort of podcast. So they were talking about people that are very resistant trained and probably are aggressively pursuing some sort of athletic goal, right? So keep that in mind. But I thought it was interesting because they said that as these athletes were aging, women were more susceptible to this low energy availability phenomenon. When mm-hmm. I say that, what I mean is these ladies that are typically, these are going to be your go-getters, your CrossFitters, your Peloton people, your endurance ladies, right? The marathoners, triathlons, et cetera, that are also mm-hmm. in low calorie, chronic low calorie. And as they reach this perimenopausal, menopausal, and then of course postmenopausal phase, they're really putting themselves into a danger zone. Now, look, if you are really low calorie and redlining and you're a dude, you are absolutely in the danger zone as well, but more so for ladies. And they were making this case that, you know, as your, of course, your estrogen and progesterone levels decline, and perhaps you don't have that same recovery it is, or you certainly don't as you were when you were younger. And that for ladies, it put them at, I can't remember the percentage, but it was a larger percentage of danger of osteoporosis, specifically this mm-hmm. low calorie, high energy demand athlete was really at danger for all these metabolic damages as well as osteoporosis, more so than men. And I didn't know if you'd heard that or if you've kind of seen some of that in some of the folks you've worked with, but certainly it makes sense given, I think, a lot of our population, right?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And I think I've seen studies, and I want to say that it's like women are 70% more at risk for osteoporosis.
Mm. Postmenopausal specifically?
postmenopausal. Yeah. Yes. But things I've seen, and, you know, and I've told clients this, that's not something that happened overnight.
Right.
You know, and that even in the last year, that's something that's been going on in your body, you know, for a long time. And at this age, if you're diagnosed with osteoporosis, I mean, the best you can do is continue weightlifting or start weightlifting.
Get strong. Yes.
You don't want to be frail, you know,
do
anything you can, you know, get off the scale, stop weighing yourself on the scale,
yourself.
And I see, and eat protein, build those muscles. Mm-hmm. You don't need the calcium supplement. I'm not saying not to take that.
Right.
I'm just saying there's so many other things you can do.
Walking
is great, but you need to be strong.
You need to be strong. And I will say this, because we talked about, you know, as specifically for ladies, as they're getting older, they're having these hormonal changes. Getting older and having hormonal changes 100% contribute to osteoporosis. We can't, you know, it would be disingenuous of us to say that that wasn't a contributing factor. It's not the main factor for somebody developing osteoporosis, right? It's these other lifestyle factors that you absolutely have control over. Specifically, the biggest thing you can do is get strong, build muscle. Anytime you build muscle, you are building bone density. So you can absolutely rebuild bone, just like you can muscle. And I think that gets missed a lot, right? Especially in modern medicine, where it's, oh, hey, there's something wrong with you. Take this pill.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to be attacked for saying this, but it's usually thinner women that get osteoporosis because they don't have much meat on their bones, so to speak, that they're carrying around.
Skinny and fat person, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And if you're bigger, then your bones are stronger because they are carrying around more weight. Yeah. But I mean, is that weight being used? Are you walking around? I don't know. But just at studies I've seen, a large population of the people that have osteoporosis are women that are skinny. And it's so conflicting, you know, and we've talked about this before, like for women, you're targeted to be skinny. They're promoting that physique and it's not strong and healthy all the time, which, I mean, I do think that something is changing and we are going in a different direction as far as that stereotype. But, you know, you diet all through your 20s, 30s, and 40s only to end up postmenopausal with health problems.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that goes back to kind of that low energy availability thing. These ladies that are constantly chasing the skinny look, right? And a lot of these ladies, not all, but a lot of them are those type A go-getters. So they're very often, they're executives in businesses. They're the leaders of the PTA, they're volunteers in this and they're volunteers in that, and they're leaders of this church group, and they're doing, serving, mm-hmm. all wonderful things, right? And then they're pounding the gym, and usually that's some sort of cardio or some sort of class because they're drawn to that intensity, right? And then they're pairing that with that low calorie. And man, while that does result in skinny, sometimes, not always, you dig that metabolic hole deep enough, that's 100% skinny fat. It's a recipe for a menopausal, postmenopausal woman to be frail, to have osteoporosis, to have some of these more metabolic health problems as they get older. So obviously we strongly rail against that. We are an advocate of making people in our age group strong, healthy, functional, capable, vital, and letting the body composition follow as a side effect of that, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to, hey, let's chase skinny for skinny's sake. You know, and a lot of ladies would say, well, that's what I want. And, you know, maybe who am I to say what somebody wants or doesn't want? But I would say that being strong, being capable, being functionally mobile through full ranges of motion will be a better way for you to have that aesthetic, that lean toned look you're probably chasing, than eating like a rabbit and being a slave to a treadmill, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, and to your point about like the low energy availability, like if you're not eating that much and you are so busy all the time, you don't necessarily, your body doesn't have the energy to do those workouts that you want to do. Or, you know, and then afterwards, if you're not eating, after your workout, which is something that I work with my clients on a lot, like eating something before they exercise. I don't care if it's 5:30 in the morning. Yeah. Men can get away with that sometimes, that fasted workout.
Not a fan.
Women really can't. Yeah. No.
Some people
and
love
I.
It. Yeah.
I've experimented with it. I used to think I don't feel any different if I eat or if I don't eat, and I'm wrong. I just tell myself that. So
oh, yeah.
You know,
no,
I
know
busy
a huge
in the morning.
Difference. If I don't eat, I'm not performing. Not at the same.
Yeah.
Not even close. Yeah.
No. A lot. There's studies on this, but it's really hard to prove whether or not men, how it affects their cortisol in the morning. Women's cortisol is highest as soon as we wake up. Men seem to vary between right before bed or right when they wake up. Hmm. So if you're a man who has really low cortisol in the morning, then you might be able to get up and go start your workout without having to eat anything. If it's high, then you really do need to eat something before you work out. And then women, we have like a 90-minute window when we're done training to get protein in.
Yeah.
Men have a little longer. They can wait like up to 3 hours. And it's just that neuromuscular energy that we're recruiting to build muscle. If we don't eat protein, it's just not going to happen.
That's our window of gains,
like,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. And I always tell myself and tell clients, like, you have 90 minutes. And if you don't eat some protein or something, you know, but preferably protein, and somewhere between 30 and 40 grams, that workout was a waste.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah. And you can't make up for it later in the day.
Right.
Then it's gone. And then your cortisol starts going up. You know, because your body's kind of in this crisis mode of, you know, I just used all this energy, but
didn't get
now, you know, and that's some,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've done that myself, like just being in a rush and not having time to eat after working out. And then by the afternoon, I'm so dead and I'm blaming the workout. And it's really just how I fueled my body after my workout.
Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of this conversation probably comes down to, right, is, you know, we think culturally, we think of food as we need to restrict food. We want to lose weight. We want to be skinny. But really, if you flip that paradigm around and say, no, I don't want food to be the enemy. I want it to be my friend. And I want to view food as fuel mm-hmm. for my performance. And how do I optimize my food as fuel as opposed to how do I restrict it? How do I have this love-hate relationship with it? I want to eat it, but I can't eat it. And that sets you up for a long-term disaster, really. And unhappiness, I think. And I think that just that paradigm shift of thinking of food as I'm fueling for life performance, whatever that looks like for you, right? I want to show up as the best version of myself. And look, maybe you're not PRing lifts or doing incredibly athletic things, but still that primacy of food as fuel first, right? And of course, it should, you know, you should choose foods that you enjoy eating and that eating can still be a pleasurable experience, all that stuff. So,
right.
All right. Well,
and like when you think about, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, you know, when you think about it, like if you can always be fueled for every training session and then fuel yourself right after, then the rest of your day, you're going to be in a better position to make better choices.
You're going to show up as the best version.
You're
going to
feel better.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Are.
I mean, mentally, you have more clarity. Mm-hmm. You know, your brain is feeling good. Your stomach is happy. Mm-hmm. So it just helps you make better choices. You don't make that McDonald's McChicken, McCrispy
yeah,
chicken,
McCrispy chicken
drive-through. You know.
Yeah.
You know. You kind
day.
Of sit there, right? And it being hangry isn't fun either. You know. And that affects men and women equally.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen that. And if you're not eating during the day, or you know, you're gonna work out and skip lunch because you know, you're trying to lose a few pounds before you go on vacation, you're just going to end up in a really bad mood. Mentally, you don't feel good. You're going to be stressed. Your cortisol is now going up, and now you're going to make a terrible decision.
I can relate to all of that. I think everybody listening can relate to all of that. We've all been there. I occasionally still do that, right? And I know better. I make a living telling people, don't do that. Don't put yourself in that position. I still find myself in that position from time to time. Certainly, ask my wife. She'll tell you, I get hangry sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Not my usual chipper, pleasant self.
No. Yeah. Yeah. We've taken many road trips that my husband and I are sitting in the front seat, not speaking.
Right.
Because we're both hungry,
both
but
hangry.
Neither one of us want.
Yeah. 100%.
We're hangry and, you know, we can't agree on a food place and gas station protein bar, protein shake didn't cut it.
Yeah. So the gas station, that reminds me, when I'm traveling now, my go-to now is first thing I do is go to the dairy section in the gas station. Maybe they have it, maybe they don't. It's 50-50 these days, but those core powers, and I'm not really advocating folks drink those, but it's 42 grams of protein.
Yep.
And it's in a gas station, right? It's better than the pastry or the chip or the thing that you want to grab because it's quick, it's easy, it's tasty. And like you said, you're out of your element. There's probably a little bit of stress because you've been in the car all day. But that's one of the things I'm grabbing for these days if that's available to me.
Yeah. No, I'm glad that they have those now.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it is a good option. And I'll tell clients about those. And that I was just drove to New York a few weeks ago and that was my go-to two times at the gas station was a core power and then a fruit cup.
There you go. Yeah. All right. Well, Jess, as we're kind of wrapping up here, difference between men and women, let's talk a little bit about the differences and the similarities when we do exercise, and specifically, I mean, strength training programming for men and women. Let's start with what are some considerations? What are some things that might be different in a ladies program? We've already talked about, hey, it might be more frequent or might have more volume and guys might be a little less, but just in like exercise selection, things like that. Are there any considerations that you make when you program for your ladies versus your guys?
I don't. I really, I have found that women a lot of the times have the same goals as men. They want their arms to look good, you know, in a tank top. They want their legs to look good. They want to look muscular. And I do think that that is sometimes, you know, a stereotype that women shouldn't do chest and they shouldn't do bicep curls and things like that. And there's a woman that I'm working with that really doesn't want to do those movements, or she's not. I have some women that they're not comfortable bench pressing at the gym because they're by themselves and they don't have anybody to spot them. So those are some considerations I take that I know, depending on the person and the client, it's mostly women, you know, older women, they're at the gym for the first time in their 50s and 60s. Right. It can be intimidating. So that is something that I take into consideration more than if I think they can do it and should do it. Right. It's what are they comfortable doing that I can get them strong doing it, that they aren't going to feel too intimidated with this machine or having to ask somebody for help.
Yeah.
You know, and if that means that in order to get those dumbbells up and get them on their shoulders, we have to do more reps and more sets and we aren't able to get, you know, as heavy as we want, then that's fine. Where I know most of the time, men will walk into the gym, they want to go for those heavier weights and they have more muscle to get them up at, you know, and start the movement no matter what it is. You know, so that is something I try to take into consideration is what are you comfortable doing and try to meet them there. But, you know, as far as volume, I try to give men a little more, or movements, I try to give men a little more rest if it's a strength phase of their program, because they're probably doing more weight or it's going to take longer to change those weights out and things like that. Where women, I'd rather that they're doing that same weight over more sets, but maybe they're doing less reps, you know, like five sets of three with a minute or 2 minutes rest in between. And maybe men are doing three sets of five, you know, just because that muscle fatigue that we talked about earlier.
Yeah. No, it's interesting that you talked about kind of that upper body phenomenon. I know in our program, we have what we call studio programs. So some after our clients have gone through our program, they can stay in the app and they can just self-select all these different exercise programs. So we have a whole bunch of different programs in there. And one of them is called, I think it's called Gun Show, and it's an arm program. It's to develop specifically for developing arms, right? And there's two of them. There's two phases to that. There's a hypertrophy, I think a strength phase first, and then a hypertrophy phase specifically on develop for people who want to develop arms. And I wrote that program for men and women, both. But as soon as I named it Gun Show, and there's, you know, there's a little, the image that goes with that program is a big bicep, right? And I was like, oh, no ladies are ever going to download this. So you know what I did? I duplicated that same exact programming, and I named it Lean Tone Sexy Arms, and I put a lady with Lean Tone Sexy Arms as my cover for that particular program. So now we have two programs in our library, our program library, for arms, for men or women who want to develop arms, it's the same program. So cats out of the bag, current clients, that if you're like, hey, but that's exactly what we did. Because in that sense, we're just kind of marketing it different, right?
Right,
but yeah. To your point, everything else is the same. The exercise selection is the same. The reps, the rest periods, the sets, they're all the same. If you want to build a little bit of muscle or even a lot of bit of muscle on your arms, this is the way you would do it, whether you're a man or a woman, right? So there are some similarities. And I've had some, you know, occasionally we'll still get the females that will say, hey, I'm more interested in this area. And it's very often it's lower body, and you get the guy that's more, yeah, I want the beach muscles, bro. Interested in chest and shoulders and biceps, things like that. However, what I really love programming for, and look, if somebody says I want to, you know, there's this part of my body I want to develop, well, absolutely 100% program for that. But at the same time, if you're in your 50s and 60s and working on strength, whether you're just starting out or whether you're more advanced, there is huge carryover to being functionally strong. And by functionally strong, I mean it's what it sounds like, right? It's being able to deadlift, it's being able to squat, it's being able to push and press and just do and move through a full range of motion, right? Posterior chain and core. So when I say posterior chain, I'm talking about the hamstrings, your glutes, your back, lower, upper, mid back, all of that really, really vital. Your core, I'm talking about everything from your chest to your hips, all the way around your body. That's your core, right? So I'm not talking necessarily crunches. That might be a part of how you work on your core, but more functional things. I think the older we get, the more that type of programming, whether you're a guy or a gal, is paramount. Would you agree, disagree?
No, I agree 100%. I have some clients that don't like some movements, you know, and I'll get them in. And one of the things that, you know, that we do with the Silver Edge, we'll customize your program. So you're telling me you hate this movement, you can't do it. We're going to take a look through it. I'm going to figure out why you can't do it. And then I'm going to decide, is this functional? Does this make sense for you to keep working at it every week? And a lot of the times, it's yes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Turkish get up is one
Turkish
movement.
Get up, there
that
you go. Love it.
So many clients.
Everybody
you know,
over
they
50,
do,
you don't know what it is. Hit us
look
up.
It
we'll
up.
Send, you a, send you a video. But every person over 50, man or woman, should be a master of that movement.
Right. And I say, you know, I just had a new client that started a couple of weeks ago. And yesterday we had a check-in call and she said, there's this movement. I can't think of what it's called.
It's complicated.
She's like, I can't do that with weight. I'm doing it without weight. I'm like, doing it without weight is fine. Mm-hmm. But for people that don't know, you're starting on your back with a weight in your hand and you are standing up with it.
Overhead.
And it's figuring
you're
out those logistics, right? With the weight over your head, figuring out those logistics. And I was like, hey, it's the most functional movement. It feels in crazy when you're doing it and when you're learning it, if it feels very foreign, but then it works every muscle in your body. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, there's a good chance at some point you're going to find yourself laying on the ground and you want to be able to get up and you want to do it safely and you might have something in your hand. Now, are you going to be holding it overhead? I don't know, but you know, probably not. But just knowing how to do that and having the mobility to do that and having the core strength, as you've talked about, you know, to do that, like that's functional. Yeah. That's something I'm going to make you keep working at, even though you think it's, you know,
don't like that
feels
one.
Weird.
Yeah. So I'll get, you know, I get I saying, will. You know, I've got a new client myself who's having a problem, difficulty with the lunge movement. It's balance, right? It's that full range of motion, getting all the way down and the balance. And what I've agreed with him is that, okay, look, it sounds like we've got some stability, some balance, and some strength that we need to work on. So we're going to go back to bilateral movements with the expectations. I just want to get you strong enough and stable enough to get you into these split stance, unilateral lunging type movements, right? You should be able to do Bulgarian split shots. You should be able to do front lunges, back lunges, and single leg deadlifts and things like that, right? So while we have removed those movements now, except what I said was, hey, let's do a limited range of motion. I feel really unstable. I'm getting a very small range of motion. All right, let's back up. Let's just back up a little bit. Let's get stronger overall, a little more confident, brand new to resistance training, right? And then let's go back to just know that I am definitely, whether you like it or not, we're coming back to those split stance kind of, because again, yeah, it's that very functional, real life, getting older kind of movement. So that as you move into your 60s, your 70s, your 80s, your 90s, right? You've got this, you're developing this, this muscle knowledge and skeletal knowledge of how to move in these important planes of movement. So absolutely.
And lunge is a big one. I hear from my clients that they, when they first start out, they don't want to do the lunge. You know, what else can I do? Can I squat? I'm like, no, you got to lunge.
Can you lunge?
Yeah.
Then yes, you should lunge. Yes.
Yeah. And I'll put in as a habit for them, you know, to do balance work, balance on one leg for 10 seconds, then the other leg for 10 seconds.
Yeah, I need to do that for a few of my folks.
And then, just work on that balance. And then that lunge will start to come eventually, but keep doing it. You don't have to get down far. You know, I'm like, but if you were ever sitting on the floor, how do you think you get up?
Yeah.
You're in a lunge position at some point. Right. You know, you got to take a big step up a hill. You have to lunge. Yeah. So you have to be able to do that.
And for my pickleballers, we want to be able to lunge in all directions. We want to do side lunges. We want to do diagonal lunges. We want to do reverse. We want to be really strong and stable and functionally mobile. See how I tied this whole thing?
Yes. Back to pickleball.
Yeah, I think every episode now is going to be the pickleball episode. We'll just have a couple other things we talk about in between. But as I get excited and enthusiastic about my new pickleball career here. All right. Well, Jess, I want to thank you so much for coming on, sharing your insight and your wisdom with us. And for folks listening, what I would encourage you to do is let's continue the conversation. Love to hear your thoughts on anything we talked about or anything really healthy aging related. Best way to do that is join us in our private Facebook group. We have a fabulous group. It's called the Over 50 Lean Body Blueprint. So if you just go to Facebook and type in Over 50 Lean Body Blueprint, or just go to the show notes for this episode, you can have a direct link over there. Love to have you there. We have a fabulous community, folks in there supporting each other on our healthy aging journey. Lots of guys, lots of girls, so we can continue the conversation about training, talk about Ozempic. Anybody out there trying it? I'd love to hear how that's going. Jess, thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, that's our show for today, folks. If you've enjoyed this podcast, I want to let you know that we have other free resources over at silveredgefree.com. There you'll find our free guides with our top tips on nutrition, exercise, and healthy lifestyle to assist you in your weight loss and fitness journey. So feel free to head over there and download anything that looks useful to you. I'll put the links to everything we talked about today in the show notes. You folks can find those over at silveredgefitness.com/278. As we wrap up our time together today, you can show your support for this show in two important ways. The first is to tell a friend about this podcast and encourage them to give it a listen. The second is for you YouTube folks to click the like and subscribe buttons, and for you podcast folks to please give this podcast a 5-star review on whatever platform you listen to podcasts on, and be sure to subscribe and follow so you don't miss any future episodes. I really appreciate you spending your time with me today, and until next time, stay strong.